And good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you listening. Glad to have you watching. We're here this morning on WILL AM, but also online at will.illinois.edu. So if you'd like to go to our website, you can watch the program that way. You can listen just the usual way. We're talking here this morning about a project that is known as Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband, or for short, it's referred to as UC2B. And what that is an effort, it's a cooperative effort that involves the University of Illinois, the cities of Urbana and Champaign, and also some other partners we'll mention. We want to get everybody's name in here. And it's a cooperative effort that involves all these parties that's dedicated to building and operating an open access fiber optic broadband network throughout the Champaign-Urbana area. We will talk a little bit this morning about the goals of the project. We'll get a progress report, and we have guests here representing both the university, or at least the Graduate School of Library and Information Science, and also the two cities. And as we talk, I'm sure that people will have questions, and I hope that we'll be able to do that, at least if people have basic questions about what is UC2B, how is it getting rolled out, when is it going to be in business, and why, you know, what's the benefit? That's the idea here, and we can take those sorts of questions. And I'm sure that one or more of our guests can answer them. And let me introduce to you the folks that we have with us in the studio. John Gant, who is right here next to me in our first position. He's an associate professor in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science. Laisha Medards is also in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science and involved, I think both of them actually have been involved in the operation to try to see what sort of need and receptivity there would be to the idea of bringing internet to more people.
Correct.
So we'll talk about that some more. Also here is Deb Finan. She's a member of the City Council of Champaign. She also happens to be the chair of the UC2B Policy Board. And rounding out the group here, Brandon Bowersox. He is a member of the Urbana City Council and is the vice chair of the Policy Board. So thank you all very much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. If people would like to read the fairly long history of this effort, they can go to your website. If they just put UC2B into their web browser, they'll find you.
That's
and
right.
They can read a lot more about it. But as a short, if we can, in short, to sort of start out, how did we get to this point where now we're actually laying cable for this?
Well, it's been a long history. Even before UC2B and this fiber optic effort, for years there have been people in this town working on broadband and the digital divide, projects like PrairieNet that was the first free dial-up service, or things at the Independent Media Center to try to give free web hosting to community organizations, and a whole history of things. And, of course, we invented the web browser here too. But this latest effort was an effort of the cities and the U of I to propose, as part of the Recovery Act, to get federal funding to help build really one of the nation's now fastest cutting-edge broadband networks that's purely based on fiber optics. So whereas PrairieNet was based on dialing up with a modem, you know, that was the technology from that era, fiber optics is really a kind of future-proof technology that it's clear is going to be what's powering the fast internet for years to come. And this amazing project is really due to a federal grant that a bunch of these local entities got together to write to build this cutting-edge network here in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah. So this, we're talking about a significant amount of money here. Mm-hmm. Some has come from the federal government, some has come from the state government, and also the two cities. Mm-hmm. I want to mention also it includes the schools and the libraries mm-hmm. and the MTD. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have contributed a very significant amounts of dollars to this, right? Mm-hmm.
Correct. One thing I wanted to add to Brandon, because I think it wouldn't be fair to talk about UC2B without mentioning Mike Smeltzer, who really has been part of trying to help people with the digital divide for years as part of CCNet and as part of the grant writing process for Big Broadband. I think it makes sense to mention his name as one of the people who's really been instrumental in making this happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the important goals here is to, you know, in addition to providing this kind of high-speed connectivity to government entities, to schools, to libraries and so forth, is to try to provide internet service to people who are not now served.
Mm-hmm.
And that particularly for you folks in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science have been involved in trying to make some assessment of what that need is and how people feel about that. Mm-hmm. So talk about that.
Yeah, it's an important part of the project. Actually, even during the grant writing phase back in 2009, Mike Smeltzer worked with a group of folks from the Graduate School of Library and Information Science and from Atlas to put together a neighborhood survey. So we had teams of people go door to door and talk with households, talk with the families there, to ask them about their computer use and so forth. And actually, Laisha was actually one of the team members that worked on that, and that really gave us a good sense of what the need was in our communities. And so, moving forward with the UCB project, there's 11 neighborhoods throughout both cities that are targeted. They're mostly low income areas, and they also areas where there's little internet use. And so, areas such as Garden Hills, Garden Park, Bristol Place, Shadowwood, Douglas Park, Crispus Attucks, and so forth are areas that are included in the grant that are going to be receiving service through the UCDB project.
Now, are these people for whom being connected to the internet is just not now an option because of infrastructure, or is it because they would say, excuse me, they would say, well, I'd like to do that, but I can't afford that?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's you can see a number of different responses and a number of different needs or people being slow to adopt for a number of reasons. When we've done our door-to-door canvassing, many of our responses have been mainly the price point, the affordability, and especially in the economy right now, what the importance is as far as, you know, your household needs. And our response rate has really been targeted towards the price point.
And what do you think that's going to be? Or do you know?
Well, we've always said starting out that it will be a $19.99 base. And what that will look like as far as different tiers and price points is up to the policy board. And as we work through with our business consultants and moving forward to establish those different tiers, we'll really see what it will actually look like in the end. But right now, we can certainly say that our price point starting out will be $19.99.
Mm-hmm. You know, and another factor that's come up, you know, when the Obama administration put together a national broadband plan, they really identified, in addition to price, there was a particular gap in terms of seeing the relevance of the internet technology. And then thirdly, you know, having the right set of skills. You know, there's you know, skills in terms of using the computer and understanding how to use broadband and things like that. So the so those are also barriers that we've got to try and address here in our local community as well, too, trying to figure out how to make it easier for people to purchase computers, how to get help with using the computers and things like that. So those all work together. It's not just simply offering you know, affordable price, but it's also looking at strategies for getting people to get access to computers and training and that sort of thing as well.
And I would say, you know, unfortunately, we did not receive the second part of the grant, which is the community computing centers that would do some of the training that Dr. Gant's talking about. And I think once this project is really fully up and implemented, the next step is really going to be about trying to raise money within the community and or spend some of the profit, if there is any profit, from UC2B toward community computing centers in training and trying to help underserved areas purchase equipment. Mm-hmm. And that's something we're going to have to come together as a community to do because we did not receive federal funds to do it. But it will be an important component in helping this work.
Mm-hmm. Let me just very quickly, for anybody who may have just tuned in, we're talking this morning about the Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband Project, known for short as UC2B. And here in the studio with me, John Gant and Laisha Medertz, and they're both with the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at University of Illinois. Deb Finan is a member of the City Council of Champaign. She also chairs the UC2B Policy Board. And Brandon Bowersox, he's a member of the Urbana City Council, and he's the vice chair of the Policy Board. And we're just trying to ask some basic questions and get some basic answers about what is UC2B, what's the idea, and where do things stand now. People who are listening and watching can call 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455 if you'd like to call in. If you have a question, you can also send us an email, and you can write to will-talk@illinois.edu. This now, partly of what we're talking about here is it is a network. It mm-hmm. is a basically it is a pipe. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to provide the pipe and give people a chance to get hooked up to the pipe. Mm-hmm. Is UC2B also? Is it your also intention to be an internet service provider?
Yeah, the basic plan is that we build these pipes. And there's construction crews people have seen all over town actually laying these orange pipes that are sticking out of the ground. And then when they finish it off, putting a little manhole, or it's actually kind of the size of a hand, so we call it a handhold, in people's front yards and fixing the grass around it so it's flat with the yard again. And so that's the physical construction under the ground. And with the wires in the ground, UC2B, the entity, is going to be initially a service provider on the network so that people can say, okay, I do want to sign up for that $19.99 a month service that Leisha talked about. I do want to sign up for that and get this really fast blazing internet over this new connection that's in the ground. But the way that the Stimulus Recovery Act funds that paid for this were structured actually means that this is a publicly owned piece of infrastructure that is open access. Open access meaning any ISP, any private provider can use these same pipes under the ground to provide their own internet or phone or TV service to the customers. Mm-hmm. So people in this neighborhood will actually hopefully someday soon have the choice of lots of different providers to get lots of different kinds of services over this, because every company, whether it's Comcast or AT&T or Volo or Consolidated Communications or any private ISP has the ability to use the same infrastructure because it's a piece of publicly owned infrastructure and investment in our future that's open to any private provider to use to give folks in these neighborhoods more choices and more services. And yeah.
Well, here, and I'm particularly interested in both of you speaking to this issue because you're involved in city government. There are, as I suppose, is a political dimension to this in the sense that here we have a tax-supported government entity that's going to be competing with private sector companies who are providing the same service. Do you see any kind of problematic issues? It must be that you don't, because the cities did approve the funding.
Well, I think part of it is we don't know exactly what the structure will be for UC2B. Mm-hmm. Today, it is a governmentally owned entity. It could become a not-for-profit corporation. It could continue and, you know, have the form similar to one that MedCAD has, where all the member governments are part of it. My philosophy is that we don't want private sector being competed with by government. But we're in areas primarily right now where the private sector hasn't been. They're ignoring these 11 census block areas. I know, for example, even at my house, and I'm not in the census block areas, I can't get AT&T U-verse even if I want it. Mm-hmm. And so this is really about bridging the digital divide. It's about bringing technology that is changing the world to our entire community and giving everybody access. And at this point, to me, that concern overrides any of the public-private competition issues.
Yeah, I agree. We, as a local government, I wouldn't have wanted to see the city of Urbana participate in something if the private sector were already doing a great job. But I was so excited to be part of this project and that the government is participating simply because there was just a total vacuum. The private sector wasn't serving our needs. And I mean, on a big global scale, we know that the U.S. is like 30th in the world in terms of broadband speed building out to its citizens. We're just way behind. I think one year when the list was put together, we were like next to Romania, you know, and countries like France and the U.K. and Australia, all of those countries are investing in broadband and have much, much better broadband. And they're at the top of the list. But the U.S. is way behind in broadband deployment. And it's because of our different model, the way that the telecom industry has been regulated and works in this country is just a very different model. And this open access model is one where there can be one set of pipes in the ground, if you will, that all the providers can share. and competitively offer service over. And that open access model is one that's in the UK and elsewhere and is part of why all these other countries are way ahead of us. So it is a little bit of a different philosophy for local governments to join together and to be part of this grant and to offer this to our citizens as a service. But it's a new kind of approach that hopefully will put the U.S. back ahead and hopefully will put Urbana-Champaign ahead and let every neighborhood, like Deb was saying, let every neighborhood have a chance to get the broadband that we know these days is needed for education and for jobs and for an opportunity.
Well, do you see eventually, say, where I live, I have a grand total of two choices if I want to have internet. And I live in Brandon's ward in Urbana. So I would not be one of the first target groups to get service from UCTV. Mm-hmm. But do you see the possibility eventually of some using that backbone and building out so that eventually anybody could have a high-speed fiber optic connection, the best, whatever the state of the art is, the best that there is? So anybody could say, yeah, I want one of those. Hook me up.
Well, and if you look at the rings where the pipes are going in the ground, they are throughout our community. And so we're creating a map of the wires throughout our community that will then allow other neighborhoods to be connected. I think there are lots of questions about how that will happen. It could be, you know, a tax referendum where everybody agrees, you know, just like roads and just like fixing stormwater, we want to make sure we have this infrastructure in place. It could be that neighborhood groups and, you know, or subdivisions come together and they say, you know, we've got a ring that goes around our subdivision and it would cost X number of dollars to bring it into our subdivision and then each house would connect. So we're going to come together as a homeowners association and do an assessment and pay for that to come. So there's lots of options to bring it. And I think, again, once we get this first step completed, the UC2B entity that becomes, whether it's a not-for-profit corporation or it continues to be a governmental entity, will have decisions to make about how to help bring that service throughout the community. Because I think I can speak for everybody sitting at this table that's our goal, is to get it to everybody in the community.
Okay. And this first phase, this initial phase, when is it that expected to be finished?
Well, the crews are actually out now, and we actually saw one of the crews right outside of your building as we came in today, and so it was pretty exciting to see them. And if you drive in areas around campus right now during this winter break, you'll see the crews are done a lot of work. But the plan is that they'll continue with the construction and actually start people or sign up or have people using the service sometime in April is the early start date for lighting up houses, and the project will continue through the end of January of 2013. So,
all right. We have some callers here. I want to bring them in. Again, I want to say for people who are listening on WYLL AM or watching on our website, that's will.illinois.edu. We have four guests, John Gant, Laisha Metters. They're both with the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at U of I. Deb Finan is a member of the Champaign City Council and chairs the UC2B Policy Board. And Brandon Bowersox is a member of the Urbana Council, and he's the vice chair of the Policy Board. And we're talking about the Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband Project. And we have some callers here, and we'll start in with somebody in Champaign on our line number one right here. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
You're getting at the when, but, you know, for phase one, is there any sort of, you know, what time period there? And then phase two is, how long is that, 3, 4, 5 years or what? Completion of this thing that's going to actually be in, you know, you're in phase one, and that makes a lot of sense, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, expanding to the rest of the community, it sounds like when you talk about options, we're talking about a lot of decisions, and that takes time. Mm-hmm.
So at least for the initial phase, we're looking at maybe about a year.
Okay, what about...
But then on from there, what do you think?
We don't have a schedule yet. We currently, this grant runs for another full year until February of 2013, and so the whole focus now is simply building out in these 11 census blocks, building out the service everywhere and making sure all 5,000 folks who live there in the residences there, in apartment buildings or businesses in those areas of town, know that the service is available. And there are folks going door to door, as Laisha mm-hmm. mentioned, and the people will answer the door and talk to them and hopefully be interested in service. It's those 11 census blocks, as well as getting the schools and community organizations hooked up now, that's really our mm-hmm. primary focus. We don't yet have a timeline for when expansion to other neighborhoods could happen. And I agree with Deb that it's something everyone who's involved in this project is really eager to talk about and figure out. But our primary focus first has to simply be serving these original census blocks and getting the first phase of construction done. So I do think it would be a matter of years to make the decisions about how to get to our whole community, simply because there's so much work to do to get there.
And the other thing that's happening in this first phase, too, is building out all the rings around both cities and down to Savoy as well. And then Brandon also mentioned there's in this goal, it's not only the households in those 11 tracts, but there's also a group of community anchor institutions. So these are schools, libraries, and so government organizations, nonprofits, and so forth, that are also part of this initial effort as well. But, yeah, so there's really two focus right now. There's, you know, the households and community anchors, and then also building out the rings for the entire covering both cities and part of Savoy as well, so we can reach all the schools.
And I'm sure that you would want to suggest to people that this now is the opportunity right now at this point for citizens to start talking about what they would like to see this become. So how do they communicate that to the policy board of UC2B?
We meet on the first and third Wednesday of every month, although this month we're meeting tomorrow. And we meet from noon to 1:30. Our agendas are posted. You can email Missy Mead at the City of Champaign, or you can email myself. You can go to our website and my email is there. And just let us know if you'd like to be on our email list to receive information. You're welcome to come to the meetings. They're open meetings. And you can also email any of the policy committee members and let us know what your thoughts are.
And we're also open to coming to any community events, meetings, neighborhood meetings, any associations that we can go and actually speak about UC2B and get the information that people are trying to pass on as far as how they see it being most beneficial for them and their household and their organizations. We're very open to that. We've been holding community meetings throughout the entire phase of the project, and we'll continue to. And recently we held a focus group meeting last night for people who have already expressed interest and are willing to be a part of it. So as we go out in our door-to-door canvassing efforts, we're also asking people if they are willing to come to future meetings that focus on those exact things. So what do you see yourself using the internet for, and how can we make this UC2B project really community serviced?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'd like to go on here. We'll talk next with somebody in Belgium, which is over by Danville here, line number 4. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The question I have for you is this unique to Illinois, United States? You obviously have said it's not unique to the world, but is this unique to the United States? And if so, how do others go into it? You've written a grant and went to what sounds like a very extensive process to get this. Is there ways to move forward for other communities?
That's a great question. There are actually a number of communities in the U.S. that are building municipally owned, you know, locally owned fiber optic networks to serve their residents. And there's a history before that of community-owned cable networks and even of rural electric cooperatives, right, where people who didn't have the infrastructure that was part of opportunity in the modern era could collectively together build it themselves and own it municipally or as a co-op. So there's actually a very long history of this. And in the fiber optic era, there are a lot of towns that are doing similar projects to this. It just so happens that UC2B will be now one of the fastest with this gigabit community internet speed. There's one other project that's very popular called Google Fiber in Kansas City that is also building gigabit speeds. But other than that, we'll really be one of the fastest fiber optic networks in the whole country here in Urbana-Champaign. But there are definitely models and hundreds of other examples of municipally owned internet service around the country. And Lafayette, Louisiana, there's one in Utah called Utopia. So there's a number of projects you could Google and read all about it. And they're doing very similar things, saying we as the government, as the people, because the private providers aren't giving us the kind of broadband we need to give our kids a good education, we're going to pull together and figure out how to do this ourselves and put this infrastructure in the ground and then let all the private providers come on and provide different internet services to us. So it's great to be part of this tradition and wonderful that we could now be one of the fastest.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. I don't know, anything anybody else would want to add on to that?
Well, the other thing I guess would also want to add, there's you know, Brandon did mention these other projects that are going on, and then a couple others that are happening too, really trying to understand the best way of doing this locally, or places like in Cleveland, for example, where you've got a more of a public-private partnership with the university, with various stakeholders in Cleveland, and lighting up roughly about 100 homes in a couple neighborhoods adjacent to Case Western. As well, too. And then the caller also asked about how do you move forward if you have other communities that are very interested. You know, in the for the BTOP grants that were awarded 2 years ago, there was a very large number of communities from around the country that submitted applications, you know, for this. But I think only about 237 different projects were funded, and roughly about 112 that are these fiber type of projects. And UCDB is really the only one where you've got the fiber going to the home. As well, the other fiber projects are what they call middle mile. You know, those are the big trunks that carry from one region to another region. The state of Illinois has a project called Illinois Century Network that is funded to do that, and so forth. But you know, UCB really stands out in being unique that you're seeing this connection to the home through this funding source. Mm-hmm. But for other areas that want to go ahead, that's a big question. That's out there, you know, trying to figure out where will the next round of funding come for this type of thing as well. And so there's a large interest in trying to study and understand these projects to figure out what works well, what doesn't work well, what's the right type of model, what's the right way of having a partnership with the private sector and the public sector to really try and address these kinds of needs. How much money and effort should be spent on dealing with the adoption of the use of computers, or with training or enhancing labs and libraries and things like that. So there's a lot of research going on, too, to try and understand the lessons learned from this so we can figure out how to build out this network across the country.
Okay. I have another call I'll get to in just a moment. We do need to take a very short break here. We're talking this morning on Focus and online about the Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband Project. We'll talk some more after a very short break. This is Focus.
When Jodi Kantor was researching her book on the first family, there was one source she didn't pursue.
I've never called any of their babysitters. I just can't do it. It's the babysitter. I'm a mom. I can't call the babysitter.
But she did speak to 200 sources, including White House aides and friends of the Obamas, for her portrait of their marriage and life in the White House. Kantor's new book is The Obamas. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
This is Focus, our morning talk program, coming to you on WILL AM and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. Let me just mention tomorrow's programs. In the 10 o'clock hour, Celeste Quinn will be hosting, and her guest will be Susan Kundrat. She's a nutritionist, and she's on the program every month, and they answer questions about food and nutrition and the relationships between what we eat and our health. So that's tomorrow. And then also tomorrow, I'll be talking with David Sheffer. He's professor of law at Northwestern University and someone who's been involved with the issue of human rights internationally, particularly during the Clinton administration. And we'll be talking about a book that he wrote that's titled All the Missing Souls, A Personal History of the War Crimes Tribunals. That's tomorrow morning at 11. We're here weekday mornings, 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week. We always encourage you to call in with questions and comments. You can also go to our website and look at the schedule, find out what we'll do in the days ahead. And that's will.illinois.edu. This morning, in this part of the show, we're talking about UC2B. That's the Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband Project. This is an intergovernmental consortium that involves a number of partners. It involves the University of Illinois. It involves the cities of Urbana and Champaign. And I just want to mention real quick, there are other organizations that put money into this, and I want them to get a mention. So in addition to Urbana, Champaign, and the university, it includes Champaign Unit 4 Schools, the Champaign Telephone Company, Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District, the Lincoln Trail Library System, the Urbana and Champaign Sanitary District, and the Urbana Schools, District 116 Schools. And all of them put money into this deal, as did the cities and did the university. And here are our guests are John Gant, Laisha Medards from the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at the U of I, Deb Finan, who is a member of the Champaign City Council and chairs the UC2B Policy Board, and Brandon Bowersox. He's a member of the Urbana City Council, and he's the vice chair of the Policy Board. So just I have some callers here. I want to get to them. Just, but real quick, is GISLIS has a particular are you leading the charge as far as the university is concerned on this project?
Well, I wouldn't say we're leading the charge. They actually cites Mike Smeltzer is the overall director for the UC2B project. So he was the principal investigator who worked with – he put together a team to write the application and so forth. So Mike is the director for communications networking or something at sites for the university. So he has the direct responsibility for the entire project, and he has great years of experience in building these types of networks and so forth. So the GISLIS team was brought on to – because we have a lot of expertise in studying the adoption and use of broadband through our work with PrairieNet early on, and then the early work with the survey we did for the grant writing. So our role is to help develop plans for the adoption of broadband by the community anchors and households and so forth. So okay. We have a team. That's doing so. Laisha is our project director for that, and I'm our project coordinator. I'm the director for the project, and we have a team of about 15 or so, what we call community ambassadors, that are helping us to go door to door. And we've got a short survey that we ask that really helps us to identify what the needs are in terms of broadband in our different communities.
Okay. Well, we have some callers here. They've been patient. I want to get make sure we get to them, and we'll go next to someone in here where we are, Champaign County, line 2. Hello.
Hi, group. I wanted to raise 2 points, and one of them, last one, will be more general, and you don't really need to respond to it, but I wanted to put it out for the broader population to maybe do some research on it. But the first thing is that I understand, I worry that there won't be any follow-through on this and that the funding won't continue at federal or state level. But and I understand that there's the rollout money that's available for these districts is really only about half as much as it needs to get it to everyone. So there's a first-come, first-serves basis for that. I'd like to know how that's going. And the other thing is, regarding that specifically, I wonder if there's any provision for, you know, sharing, since I worry that there won't be any money for everybody to get a drop right in their house, that anybody that signs up for this would sign up something where they would have to share it through a wireless technology, so a neighbor who hasn't gotten on board would then be able to still link in with only a small degradation in transfer rates. The broader point is that the one elephant in the room that hasn't been mentioned, the university is sort of a proxy for them, and that's the from reading Smeltzer essay. One of the reasons for this was to have a redundant connection to the internet for Internet 2, and that would one of the major players in that is the university, of course, itself, but also Research Park, which brings in the idea of corporate connections to the internet and the deep blue waters, and which is still going ahead under another name, I guess, but. So basically, it's just the corporate players are there too. They aren't named as underwriters of it. So I just wanted to alert people to that sort of dimension. And I don't know how clear I am in explaining that, but if people research on who's out at Research Park, they'll perhaps see what my ulterior motive is for that part of the question. But I actually expect most people expect the first section to be what you people want to treat, and I'll hang up and listen.
Right. Well, good. Thank you for the question. Let's do that.
Yeah, well, I guess all of us can respond to the different parts of the question, but the caller really raises an important point that the grant itself that's received from the government is its budget for wiring, I think, the first 2,500 household, homes, and premises. Our overall goal, though, is to try and get as many organizations, as many households, that want to sign up for this service to sign up. And we actually look at it as a good problem, that if we have more than 2,500 people and organizations that sign up, we're going to find a way to make sure that they can. There is a real cost in doing this, and that's why there's a limit of 2,500 that was written to the grant, because it's roughly cost about $3,200 to make that connection from the curb to the home. And we're talking about building fiber directly to the home as well. So this is, as Brandon mentioned, a future-proof technology that should be able to stand the test of time. But the goal is to try and get as many people to sign up as early as possible. And if we do have more people that are interested, we're going to figure out a way of doing it. A solution that we've not considered really is dividing the service, like building small wireless network, as the caller is suggesting. The goal really is to make sure that everyone that signs up gets their own connection for you. So that's really what the goal is, for this. Mm-hmm. And then I'll let others talk, but there certainly are great benefits to the broader community, including the corporate community, including the university community, in building this network and having the connections to internet too, and so forth. Because we're talking about being able to build, gigabit connections, which will really enhance research and commerce and that type of thing. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? What do you want to take a piece of it?
Well, the caller mentioned just the worry about follow through, and I think that all of the partners are very much invested in this project and want to see it through just as much as anyone else. This is a pilot program, and so we do need the community to be invested just as much, and so to give the project a chance and to really, get onto the system, to tell your friends, tell your neighbors, so that we can see this project in a way that can be most effective and truly make an impact for the community. Even though it's only in the 11 census block areas where people have the direct, fiber to the home access, as John mentioned before, with connecting to so many community anchor institutions, it really truly is a impact throughout Champaign, Urbana, and the services that, these organizations provide to our families and to our community at large. And so the worry is something I can say, I think, and speak for everyone, that we all are concerned, about just how it follows through. But we all are certainly committed to seeing it through the best that we can.
Yeah. Why does it take $3,000 to hook up? It seems like an awful lot of money.
Oh, well, because you're actually making a fiber connection. So there's the cost of the fiber itself. There's the labor hours for making the connection, digging the hand hole and then actually making the connection to the house. And then there's equipment as well, too. So it's roughly about $3,200.
So this will be an in-ground cable, not something that's strung from a pole up to your house.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not like the old days of cable where you can go. Yeah,
well, that's, that's kind of thinking. That was sort of what I had in my mind. Yeah. Well, here, and again, I want to get some more callers, but someone here as an email raises an interesting question. Given the fact that wireless technology is making so many improvements and 4G is here and the speed is pretty impressive and a lot of people are using wireless devices like tablets and cell phones, what is that? How does that impact the future of wire-based access? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you really need to have a physical wire going into somebody's house?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes. A physical wire really is the only way to get the kind of capacity that can work for downloading and uploading and video and streaming and, chatting and Skyping and seeing people and contributing, the kind of collaborative internet that, is just ramping up in how much bandwidth people use. I think everybody who has a cell phone or a smartphone has had the experience of sitting on their phone and waiting and waiting and waiting while the little dial spins. And it's because the airwaves, the bandwidth for cell phone traffic is just very limited compared to all the people who want to be uploading and on the internet and downloading and watching videos and streaming movies and posting things to their friends. And wires have so much greater capacity beyond what the wireless technology can do. Even when you're on your cell phone, you're depending on fiber optic cables to get you that internet because it's fiber optics that can get that huge internet connection to the cell phone tower that your cell phone handset might be talking to, because it's really the fiber optics that can bring the amount of bandwidth and the amounts of broadband that we need. So mobile devices are great, and they're always going to be part of what people use in their home and part of how people are connecting to the internet and the kids and younger generations are, and that's wonderful stuff. But it really does take fiber to get that kind of capacity into facilities that include homes and churches and schools and libraries.
And, you know, the other thing is that nationally we've got a bandwidth issue. You know, there's a spectrum issue, you know, when you talk to the FCC. And so by having the fiber optics going to home, you can shift more traffic that you would do at home. Even when you have your smartphone or tablet, you can run that on your wireless network at your home instead of using the 3G or 4G network, which then opens up more spectrum for 3G or 4G for use when you're away from home or if there's a public safety issue and that kind of thing. So it's also a strategy about how to shift some of the traffic to more fiber to keep the airwaves open to give people better service when they're using their mobile devices away from home as well, too.
I think there's discussion about the types of uses, and that sort of falls mm-hmm. into what Brandon was talking mm-hmm. about. But we've been looking at things like medical uses. So you could be at home and be connected to your doctor at Carl or Provena, who is, you know, giving you an exam, you know, through Skype, basically, or talking to you about a particular issue or monitoring blood pressure and, you know, sending large medical records and, you know, having that type of information go really requires the fiber that we're talking about.
Okay. Well, we have about 7-8 minutes left, and we have some other callers. I want to try to see if we can get everybody else in. We have somebody in East Urbana next. Line one. Hello.
Yes. Good morning, everybody.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions about UC2B in my area. I have a bulletin called Neighborhood News from Urbana, and I tried emailing a woman, Beth Reinke, I guess it is, at the Urbana Public Works Department, and it seemed to be a dead address. My big question, aside from many and down the road, if I'm able to be included, is my particular address included in one of the census blocks? And I couldn't find a feature. I'm not online right now, but I couldn't find a feature on the site to plug in my address to see if I am or I'm not, because the map that was available made it unclear.
That's
I think there's a lot of heads, people nodding heads. So what can we do for a question?
That's a great question. To anybody out there in Champaign-Urbana wondering, is my home or is my business eligible to get this gigabit fiber optic connection right away, there are two places they can go. The first is if they have internet, if they have a web browser, they could go to uc2b.net. And that's the website for UC2B, and there's a link there called Service Locator. And when you go to the service locator, you can actually type in your address. So say you were on East Main Street. If the caller was, he could type in his address on East Main Street and instantly on a map see with the dot whether his home or business is eligible for this. And I'll also give out the phone number. If people have questions, they can absolutely call us and ask anytime. The phone number is 366-UC2B, which is 366-8222. And we're happy to answer questions and make it clear. If the caller is wondering, is my side of the street included or am I on the right block to get this? We absolutely want to make sure they know.
And I'll also add that if you do find that you are part of the 11 census block areas, there's also a form on there, an interest form. So if you have not been visited just yet, you can fill out an interest form and indicate, you know, you want a follow-up call, or if you have questions related to the UC2B service, we can follow up with you that way as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay, does that do it for you? All right, very good. Well, let's go to another Urbana caller, line three. Hello.
Oh, hello. I jumped in on your show a little late, so I hope I'm not being redundant with my questions. I was just wondering, was there going to be any assistance for folks in this area to be able to have the equipment necessary to be able to use these services? And then the other question I have, is there money rolled into the funding for maintenance and repair on the network that's available?
Well, two excellent questions. In fact, I had a question from email from somebody wondering about that, the very question about, well, is there any money here for the person who says, I would like to be able to do this, but I don't have a computer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there anything in there for that, you know?
Well, as we talked about earlier, there's no money in this particular grant for that. There are a few programs going on. I know Volo Broadband has put together a program. I think it's 100
$125. Yeah, $125.
$125 for a computer or laptop. Mm-hmm. They're refurbishing older models for people. And if you want to make a donation of a computer to them, you can do that as well. And then... So it again, it's something that we'll have to tackle as part of the ongoing issues with UC2B. Mm-hmm. And with respect to maintenance and repair, there is not money in the grant for that, but that's part of our pricing structure. So the idea being that eventually the system will be paying for itself by users who are using the system.
Mm-hmm. The other place, other than Volo Broadband, there's also at Parkland College a program called Bridging the Digital Divide there. And at Parkland College, especially at the Workforce Development Center on Mattis Avenue, which people may be familiar with, that's a place you can go to get computer help and training. And if you're willing to invest the time to refurbish a computer there, they have computers that you can work on and fix up, and then at the end of the class, take it home for you and your family. So Volo Broadband and Parkland College with their Digital Divide program are two great places in the community to get computers at an affordable price.
And she also asked about financial assistance. The equipment, if you are among the first 2,500 households to sign up or businesses sign up, all of that is free for once you sign up.
Not the computer.
Let's not make that mistake. Right. But the equipment for your internet service for the network is all a part of that package. So you won't have to actually pay for the equipment. And I know for some services, you may have an additional fee for the modem or, you know, any other of the equipment needs. But that is all part of it. And there has also been talk about if there's opportunity to provide financial assistance or create, you know, packages for people who may not be able to afford the $19.99 a month service.
Right. Well, thank you for your good work.
Very good. Thanks for the call. We have about 5 minutes left, and I will say again that if people want to get in a question here real quick, we can get probably at least one, maybe two. If people want to get information, they can certainly go to the website, the UC2B website, and all you need to do is either you can do UC2B, it's a .net, right? Mm-hmm. UC2B.net, or you can just put UC2B into your browser, you'll find them. Mm-hmm. You can also call for people who don't have internet access. But so now I just want to make sure if there's anything really important that you want to say that you want people to know, we do that here when we have about 4 or 5 minutes left.
Maybe, Laisha, if you want to briefly describe, for people who do live in those 11 census blocks that are eligible to get hooked up, the other thing is that they might have some folks knocking on their door or ringing their doorbell. If you describe a little bit what, if I live in that neighborhood, what I could expect when my doorbell rings. Mm-hmm.
Well, right. If your doorbell rings and it's UC2B, please answer. We are canvassing. Even today, actually, we're out canvassing. And any days that the weather is nice during the winter months, we will be out. So expect us then. But March, the middle of March, will be our next canvassing blitz where we'll actually be out on a consistent basis. But we go out in teams of two. And It really is a few minutes of your time. It's usually 3 to 5 minutes. We ask about your interest and your knowledge of UC2B, provide a little bit of information for you, and also the survey that John mentioned, just to see about internet trends right now in the area for construction and canvas operations and the operations for the business and moving forward is really just to get the interest of people and to see how they're using the internet, what those price points may look like in the future. So helping in that regard. But we canvas during daylight hours. We're out generally between 10 to 4:30 right now. And as the daylight changes, then we'll be out a little longer. But you can expect us, and truly it's only a few minutes of your time. And so people have been very receptive, which we are very happy about. We're also sending a mailer out to residents. So if we do miss you, you'll receive something by mail. And we'll be out a couple more times throughout the year through August. So if we've missed you once, we'll try again, and we'll also send something by mail. So hopefully you can respond that way.
Okay. And you may have said this, but people can also go online mm-hmm. and indicate interest and will be contacted.
Mm-hmm. And through the mailer, I'm sorry, John, through the mailer, there is an opportunity if we miss you with a survey to fill out the information. There's a link for you to go to fill out the information online as well.
Okay. And you can also call the UC2B number as well, too, the 366-UC2B. as well. So, however, if we're out in any public events, we want to sign up people however we can. So just contact us one way or another, and we certainly want to get you signed up.
Okay. We'll try to get one more caller real quick if we can. And this is also someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yes, hello. This is Carletta Donaldson. I live in southeast Urbana. And one question that has been circulating is that, of course, it's in certain pockets of the city, North Champaign and Urbana. Once the service is connected there, will the people in other parts of the city have an opportunity to buy in to get the fast internet if they're wired already? Because, as you said, there are different pockets where they're also laying the wires around the cities as well. So, and if that's something that can't be answered right away, I will certainly. I know I have Deb's email, and I do want to stay connected. I was at the meeting last night, not because I got a message, but someone had forwarded something to me because I'm not in the area. So, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, thanks.
But thank you so much.
Well, again, I guess that goes back to the question about, you know, if there are certain people that are targeted initially. You want to get hooked up, mm-hmm. but then, you know, what's the possibility for building out from there?
And I expect that particularly in neighborhoods like Carletta describes where you can see the fiber sort of going down your street or right nearby, that the neighbors may want to get together and make a proposal. As we talked about, it's about $3,200 a household to get you connected if the fiber's already going down your street. And I can't imagine that if a neighborhood came together and said we're willing to pay that cost, that we wouldn't want to expand the service into the neighborhood. I think the bigger questions become if we want to cost share that cost, if we want to have it be paid for by tax dollars, how we're going to do it. So it won't happen immediately. It probably will happen after the 2013 date, but it's certainly something that the community will be thinking about. And if your neighborhood has a proposal, please let us know, because we'd like to consider it.
Right. Well, we're going to have to leave it at that. We'll continue to follow it. People can get more information and be in touch by going to the website of Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband. That's what UC2B stands for, UC2B.net. Our guests this morning, John Gant, Alicia Medards from the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at the U of I, Deb Finan from the Champaign City Council, Brandon Bowersox from the Urbana City Council. Thanks very much to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.